The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show Best Of Podcast.
Second hour live, and we change our direction here toward Gainesville, where another day, another headline, and seemingly more chaos for the University of Florida. Alan Taylor from The Athletic with the absolute latest. And Alan, I don't know what it's like to cover this team, because every day it seems like you're writing a similar story. First of all, good afternoon. Thank you for being here. And take us through the last couple of days in terms of what seems to be a revolving door with Billy Napier assistant coaches.
Well, you know, these off-season changes come in waves, right? You have the first wave that's usually December and impacts bowl games, and then you have that January flurry that usually gets done for the second signing day, and now I think we're in what's probably like an NFL wave, where post-Super Bowl, those staffs are being firmed up, and Florida has lost three assistants in the span of about 36 hours, two of them to the Arizona Cardinals, and then, you know, Kerry Colbert today headed toward Denver. I don't know how you gauge the severity of it. Obviously, if you lose a coach to an SEC rival, that's probably worse than guys getting promoted to the NFL lifestyle. But certainly with Florida looking at spring practice starting March 4th, you know, that's a lot of turnover to deal with, especially on the defensive coordinator side, where, you know, Patrick Toney was entering year two. And then Billy Napier reaches into Tuscaloosa to bring along Austin Armstrong, an even younger defensive coordinator who was officially 9 days into his tenure as Alabama's inside linebacker coach. So I guess there's a trickle-down effect from Gainesville to Tuscaloosa in that respect.
Yeah, and the Armstrong hire was highly regarded in Tuscaloosa, but that was for a position. Not necessarily for the DC job. I realize anyone can jump to conclusions here, but a pretty bad season to start off. A lot of chaos off season recruiting. I mean, how would you describe the current mood of the Florida football culture?
Well, as you know, I mean, beyond head coaches, I think fans pay attention to these coordinator hires. Because they're multi-million dollar, multi-year deals, and so there's a ton of a pressure on Napier to make the right hire. And obviously he has familiarity with Austin Armstrong, having overlapped for at least one season in Louisiana, and so there's something to that. But I'm not naive enough to think the fan base wouldn't have loved to see maybe an ex-NFL defensive coordinator or, you know, Florida chase somebody from another Power 5 institution that has, a little bit more of a track record. You know, what Austin Armstrong did at USM the past 2 years was doesn't wow you from a statistical standpoint, but then obviously they're football minds and understand what he was getting out of the group he had. You know, just looking at last year, they were eighth in the Sun Belt in yards per play out of 14 teams, sixth in scoring defense, fifth in third down stops. None of that's great, but they were first in sacks. And, I'm looking at some blitz tendencies now to see if he might be a little bit more aggressive blitz-wise than maybe Patrick Toney was during his first year at Florida, where the defense was brutal. And you're probably looking at a turnover of six or seven starters from that unit that begins spring practice in, less than 2 weeks.
Okay, well, let's get to the field with the practice starting in a couple of days or weeks. Who is the quarterback going to be?
Kind of feel like it's Graham Mertz after, with a guy of his age coming in with 1 and probably really 2 years of eligibility left, if he wanted to maximize that. Just not a believer in the guy making that move without some feeling that he has a chance to be a starter. And the off-the-field stuff with him has all been, every box has been checked and lots of raids and things like that. But obviously, Florida fans want to see a guy who is more productive than he was in those 32 starts at Wisconsin, where he, showed up as the highest-rated quarterback in program history. and they, you know, they didn't win enough for Paul Chryst to save his job. You know, I mean, there's still some talent there. There's some operational ability. Apparently, he's picking up the system really fast, but he's not gonna. He's not going to turn a broken play into a 50-yard run like Anthony Richardson did. I think the hope is he also won't turn a perfectly natural, clean pocket into a poorly thrown interception like Richardson did at times as well. So there's definitely going to be a trade-off in skill sets.
Chatting with Alan Taylor about the University of Florida's turnover and confusion, it's been obviously a few weeks since recruiting. I mean, from a ranking standpoint, Alan, the Gators did pretty well, but comparatively to everyone else, especially in the division and the SEC, what is the sense of how good a haul that was matched against what left the program? Where are the Gators right now?
Well, the whole knock on Dan Mullen is that, you know, finishing anywhere from 9th to 12th nationally wasn't good enough. And then, lo and behold, you know, Florida, depending on what service you're looking at, is in that 13 to 15 range now after the departure of Jaden Rashada over the NIL mess that went down here. I think Florida was, you know, in a bad place for a lot of kids. You finish second in recruiting and, you know, there's no points for that, right? It's a lot of time invested, a lot of energy invested, and if they go somewhere else, well, I guess unless they come back to you in the transfer portal, then you haven't really gained anything. But, you know, they didn't land Kormani McClain, who came from an area of Florida that typically, you know, goes to the Gators. So that's a miss. And obviously with Rashada leaving, they didn't get a highly ranked quarterback that helps those ratings as well. So organizationally, they did some things really well. I think they really improved themselves on the defensive side, including with a defensive lineman from up in Gardendale that Clemson and Alabama wanted, you know, very badly, and Kelby Collins. And I think they really helped themselves on the receiver side, but the offensive line was pretty puny, and they've had to go into the portal to try to shore up that position. So basically treading water from at least the level of recruit that Dan Mullen was bringing in when recruiting wasn't going so well.
Alan, I hear from people down there that there's still some level of optimism. Nobody wants to come to any conclusion after 1 year, but it does seem to me that some of the buzz seems to have calmed down, and we just threw the schedule up. For those who aren't watching television right now, Utah, McNeese, Tennessee, Charlotte, Kentucky, and Vanderbilt, that's a manageable, well, not really that manageable, as I catch myself. And then the second half of the season, at South Carolina, Georgia, Arkansas at home, at LSU, at Missouri, Florida State. You tell me. You cover the team. I'm not pinning you down for anything that really matters, but just best guess, if you had to make it today in late February, what do you think the Gators do next year?
Schedule's tougher than it was in 2022. You know, when they finished 6-7, you know, that trip to Utah is not going to be easy. Considering they lost to Vanderbilt last year, I don't think you can chalk up any SEC game as being easy if the team has the capacity to blow a game like that in Nashville. And really, that's when you talk about the buzz sort of dissipating from last year. You know, that's the reason. That's the one game that fans have a hard time wrapping their head around.
So Alan, if you had to give me a range, I'll make it easier for you, because a two game range between what and what? What are you talking about here?
Floor of 4, ceiling of 6-7 wins for next year.
So somewhere between 4 and 7 wins, 4 and 6 and 7 wins. Let's split the difference and go 5-7 or 6-6, which is maybe on the high side. What does that mean at the end of the season? Because recruiting is going on, you have to catch some fire somewhere. I mean, when does this program lift off? Is my question.
Yeah, well, you know, I think the old conventional wisdom was, you know, give it 3 years. But then you see what Josh Heupel does in year 2. You see how quickly Arkansas got things turned around. And with the portal, we're led to believe that you can replenish talent and plug gaps at a much faster rate than you did in the past. So, you know, if Florida's sitting there treading water around 500 again, then, you know Billy's going to have to put out some fires on the recruiting trail. I think they've got a really good 2024 class started, but as you know, if things really fall apart, then that can be iffy. He's not in the same situation, at least security-wise, say Mario Cristobal is at Miami, where, you know, you got that long contract that's guaranteed, and you can handle a 2-10 or a 3-9 season and still keep that thing on the rails going forward. I think there's more pressure on Napier to produce in year two than you would find with Mario. So, I mean, I think behind the scenes they're really happy with the transfers they brought in. It's not a great-looking name group, and high profile, but their evaluations look good, and I think they think they can get to 8 or 9 wins. But looking at this schedule from my seat right now, I don't see it.
Listen, I think most people are hoping they can because, I mean, Napier's a likable guy, and the day he was hired, it looked like a really big deal, but that seems like a very long time ago. Alan, thank you. Alan Taylor joining us from The Athletic on more bad news at the University of Florida. A number of coaches have left this week. We will take a break. Get back to your phone calls at 855-242-7285.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's HIMS.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. HIMS.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Here, let's get back to our calls after chatting with Alan there. Let's talk to John in Birmingham. Hey, John.
I think it's Don.
Well, good afternoon.
Don, it says John. Yeah. Hey, Paul, thanks for taking my call. I have some questions about, for a number of years, I was a detective sergeant in law enforcement.
Yes, sir.
And I have some questions about this, thing, but you have to keep an open mind. You listen to me, just take a deep breath and keep an open mind. That's the only way you ever get to the bottom of it. But I'm curious as to when he made his statement. They say he fled the scene. Well, then the police had to go out there and either did they contact the university and say they were looking for him, or did they go right to the dorm and talk to him? And who was present when he made the statement?
Now, Don, let me make sure I understand. Are you talking about Brandon Miller when he made the statement?
Yeah, Brandon Miller. Yeah, right.
Okay, I don't. It's a good question. I don't think I know the answer to that because. Okay. But I'm assuming you tell me. I mean, this shooting happens at 1:45 in the morning. I would assume that the police gathered up all the material witnesses very quickly, wouldn't you think?
Right, that's the first thing you want to do. You want to get them while it's fresh in their mind. So I understand that part, but what I'm saying, I wonder if they went to the university.
Oh, okay.
We need to talk to Brandon Miller, or
right.
If somebody said, well, he lives in such and such dorm, and he went
Yeah, yeah. No, I see what you're saying. I don't know. It's a good question because, you know, he was – I mean, he wasn't far away at the time, so he may have. I really don't. I can't answer that question. It's a good question, though.
Well, the reason I asked that question is because I think that if the university was notified first, they would have sent somebody with, you know, the police to talk to him.
Yeah. Well, and I would. Here's what I think, though, Don. Since Miles was on the basketball team at the moment that he was arrested, I would think the coach would have been notified very quick, immediately.
Yeah, well, that would be, if I was working the case, that was, you know, I wanted, and because the university may have based their position on his, well, they had to, on his state.
Let me ask you this, though, because everybody's talking about how quickly maybe the university knew this or that. In doing an investigation like this, how much is, you always hear the first 24 hours, but that's when you're looking for a suspect.
Right.
How much work is done in the first 24 hours?
Everything you can possibly do, because
okay.
You want to catch them by the fresh in their mind. You want to catch them before they got time to make up something to go along. And every witness you talk to is going to try to make themselves sound better.
Right.
Okay. So he allegedly made a statement that he warned Miles, whatever his name was, that there was a live round in the chamber.
Right.
And then yet his lawyer came out yesterday with a statement that he never touched the gun. So how can you check, how can you know there's a live round in there if you don't pull the slide back and loose?
Right. Yeah, it's a good point. Very good point,
so
by the
there's a lot of holes in, but you got to keep an open mind. When I was doing my investigation, I always started with a blank piece of paper and then let them, you know. And like I say, they're going to try to paint themselves a good light, but I think that for Alabama to make that decision, they had to be in on the initial – interview with him by the police, or because I'm sure he didn't run home.
Well, Don, you tell me. It's hard to imagine in a city. I mean, Tuscaloosa is a reasonably large city. It's more than just a football team and a university, but there has to be in a case like this a lot of coordination. I mean, there's only so many. It's not that. I mean, I just got through saying it's a big city, but it's really not. It's not like Birmingham or Atlanta or something like that. It would seem like everyone would know everyone else.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a big, you know, smaller city than Atlanta, but the principles are still the same.
Sure.
The procedures are still the same. You want to go out as quick as you can, get it while it's fresh in their mind. If you give them a couple of days to think about it, they'll come up with probably a totally different.
Well, let me ask you this question. I mean, Brandon Miller would be a critical witness, so it's hard for me to believe that it took long before they got him in a situation where they interviewed him.
I'm sure they, as soon as they found out his name and all that, they went like that.
Right.
But I don't know if they contacted the university first.
Right. Yeah. I don't. That's a good question, and it's one I simply do not know the answer to. Thank you very, very much for your input there. JK is up next.
Hey, Paul. How you doing today?
We're okay, JK.
Hey, Paul. Let me start this conversation off by saying this. This conversation about Brandon Miller, it can go on and on and on and on, because everybody is going by hearsay. The internet, none of us really have all the facts, and all the facts, in my opinion, haven't come out yet. But it's just like the Michael Jordan and LeBron James conversation. You're going to have 50% of people believing MJ is the best, 50% LeBron is the best, just like this situation. But what gets me is you have a certain fan base that thinks nobody else is supposed to have a negative comment about this situation if it gears towards Tuscaloosa, Alabama. And that's not right. We have a local radio station down here, Jocks Radio, and they had a defense attorney on to give that perspective. We're getting comments from Brandon Miller's attorney. We hear the comments from the AD from Alabama, the coach from Alabama, but not once have I heard the prosecution side or
hey, JK,
the attorney for the...
JK, hold on a second. First of all, this program is heard, and we're delighted to be heard on that Jocks radio station that you mentioned in Birmingham. and as you probably remember, maybe you don't, I used to work there. Number two, the prosecution is not speaking right now. They're speaking in court, and they're not coming on here trying. What do they need to say?
No, Paul, you get it wrong. What I'm saying is, they invited a guest on one side.
I know what you said. When you invite a defense attorney on, you're trying to get some texture and context to what is involved. I'm guessing, I didn't hear the interview, but I'm guessing that you were trying to determine what the standard is to charge someone with accessory to murder.
To charge anybody, I wouldn't care if Brandon Miller played for Miami, UAB, or Walmart A&M. Okay. I don't care. Let the truth come out.
And well,
I think at this point, Paul, we all need to just wait and let all the evidence come out because.
Well, JK, you're really completely off base here. The issue isn't whether he should be charged. The issue right now, I think, from fans that I'm hearing from, is really more about whether he should be playing or not.
Well, I mean, that's not left up to the fans.
But fans have every right to express their opinion. I understand you hate Alabama. I mean, that's a given. I understand that you hate anyone who's going to be fair and equitable to Alabama. But that's okay. You're not going to be institutionalized because you hate Alabama. A lot of people do,
but
JK.
As long as you admit it and
can deal with it.
I'm not trying to convict the young man, but whoever's involved that's guilty, they should be punished.
Well, I'm not trying to convict that guy. May I say one thing, JK, that I think people have forgotten?
Go ahead.
Everybody talks about, what about, and we all agree that this is a heinous crime. We all agree on that. There are two people currently in jail right now, having been charged with capital murder. It's not like nothing has happened so far. A lot has happened so far.
I agree. But also, we've gotten conflicting stories on both sides.
Of course. That's always going to happen.
But we all want the same thing at the end. We want the truth and some justice to be served.
JK, have you ever been in court?
Yeah.
You think the truth... I mean, it's not about the truth in court. It's
what you can prove.
It's true. A jury trial is about one thing. Who has the best lawyer?
Absolutely. That's what it's all about. It's not who you know, but it's what you can prove.
Well, exactly. And right now, Brandon Miller is not involved in the legal process. In the legal part of it, he's involved in the public opinion part of it. Hey, thank you for the call. Trey is up next.
Oh, Paul, you made me follow JK today. You hurt me. But, Paul, let me ask you a question. And I'm not going to be one to quick to judge here like a lot of people have. If Brandon Miller has committed a crime or he has done anything wrong, he deserves to be punished. And we have a young lady that has lost her life. Got a kid out there that doesn't long has his mother. And now we might be right or wrong by the public eye. We might be destroying another young man's life when he might have not have done anything wrong because we don't know. But Paul, I want to ask you a question about Brandon Miller because you get more information than most of us. What do you think about Brandon Miller as a person? What is your perception of Brandon Miller? Because I want to say something about his performance last night, but I want you to give me your opinion.
Well, number one, Trey, I can answer that very easily. I've never met him. I know people that do know him, and I take everything with a grain of salt because I realize when somebody who knows him is telling me something, there's a specific reason. This isn't some minister telling me this. But by all accounts, he seems to have a good reputation among the people that he knows.
Well, Paul, I coach kids around Brandon Miller's age, and a lot of them in trouble, parents in trouble. And whenever they had to play, their performance 90% of the time was affected. And it just looked like to me that Brandon Miller last night was in a different mode, and I could be wrong, I'm assuming here, But he looked like he was at peace with what was going on. And it looked like the whole team, including Nate Oates last night, was more affected by the situation and the fans than anybody else.
Well, Trey, the answer is I don't know that. He had a great game, and that's not really the issue here. By the way, DeCarla Cotton, there's a new story. I tell you what, let me get to the story in just a minute. But the family of the shooting victim has unloaded on the University of Alabama and Nate Oates, and we will get to that story when we come back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, welcome back. And there is some more developments in the Brandon Miller story. The mother of the shooting victim has spoken out to USA Today in an article written by Josh Peter. DeCarla Cotton said it's unimaginable that Alabama allowed Brandon Miller to play the day after law enforcement officials testified that Miller delivered the gun to kill Cotton's 23-year-old daughter. I'll go through this quickly, not to read the whole thing, but still, she went on to say, it's just unimaginable, and it's like his life is just going on. He took a brief pause, and it didn't stop. It's like, okay, slap on the wrist and go play ball. More in the article. She went on to say, they're worried about his career, but what about this 5-year-old boy? He's the true victim in all of this. He won't have a mother anymore to influence his growing up and who's he going to be. Cotton went on to say it should have been clear to Miller that the gun could result in violence. The gun, of course, belonged to Miles. She went on offering more to USA Today, saying, when somebody says bring a gun to them, what do you think they're going to do with it? And if there was no gun, she would not be dead. Harris's stepfather, Delvin Hurd, said the handling of the situation by Alabama basketball coach Nate Oates has been, quote unquote, god awful. Hurd said Oates crossed the line Tuesday when he said Miller had been at the wrong spot at the wrong time. Said Hurd, in relation to what Nate Oates said later, the retraction meant nothing to us because over this 5-week period, he has made a habit of making reckless statements. When I say reckless, I mean statements not considering the victim in this whole thing, which is Jamea Harris. That article just breaking from USA Today. Let's get back to the calls here. And Rob is in Wisconsin. Hey, Rob, welcome to our show.
Thanks, Paul. And I just want to start out by saying thanks to you. You and your show is a big part of the reason why a guy like me, born and raised in Chicago, 20 years living in Wisconsin, is a avid SEC fan. So thank you and for this show today. And regarding what you just read and the point you made earlier about, the question really related to why did they let Brandon Miller play and what did they know when. In Coach Oates' initial bumbling statements a few days ago, to me, he released a very painful truth in this that needs to be considered. I can't recollect verbatim what he said, but if I think you may recall when he was bumbling in his description of the situation and the impact that it would have, he mentioned that, Brandon being in the right place at the wrong time, obviously that's something that the NBA scouts will be considering. it was something to that degree, and I know it because I didn't even really want to watch it because I was so taken aback by how he was not addressing the situation with support from the university in the manner he should have. And that when I heard that, that really struck me. And what it tells us is what they knew and when is in the reality. On the one hand, you say to yourself, in the reality of the NIL world, they sat there and they said, we got him for 1 year, or the draft at any age. We've got him for 1 year. We've got to make this run. That has to be part of it. But, you know, the other question is, and I think you kind of touched on this at all, is like, you know, this is not just a problem that's indicative of something in society in the last 6 months. Earlier on the other shows you were on that you showed highlights of, et cetera. Now, granted, it was not something to any degree as heinous as what we're dealing with now. But I think if people will recollect when Bobby Knight first got himself in a stew over his comments to women about, you know, what if rape is inevitable, lay back and enjoy it.
Right.
Everyone said the same thing in essence of what's going on. Why is he still continuing to coach? And it's hard. The painful truth is, back then, those people in Indiana, the Regents and everyone else, were no different than, you know, what led to Coach Oates saying, well, you know, we know NBA scouts will take this into consideration. They're thinking about what athletics does for the school. And you know, that's that's the painful truth in this. I'll hang up and let you go on with the show. I appreciate you taking my call.
Rob, thank you. Thank you very, very much for calling. Nicholas is up next. Hey, Nicholas, you are on the air.
Hi, Paul. Thanks. First time, long time.
Thank you very much.
I do agree that there was an unfortunate rush to judgment. I'm concerned now that it seems the pendulum seems to maybe be going too far the other way, like almost like he had absolutely no, and I'm not talking about criminal at all. Let's leave criminal like completely out of it. But like he, it's almost now like, and by the way, let's assume that the lawyer's, statement was truthful as far as it went. That doesn't mean it isn't extremely sanitized and leaves out obviously a ton of details, but I can't personally believe that he was driving all over Tuscaloosa, you know, with no idea that he had a gun in his car. And if he was driving around that whole time without knowing there was a gun in his car, you know, what was his reaction afterwards? You know, wasn't he enraged that a teammate had done that to him? And, you know, when his car's being shot at?
Nicholas, like, I'm going to pose a question to everyone because I don't know the answer, but I've had people tell me that, somebody told me this morning, you would be amazed how many students have guns at this university. I don't know the answer to that. And the only reason I bring that up is that maybe it isn't surprising. Let me let you continue with your point, but I'm curious. Okay. For people who may know that answer.
Right. But you know, but then you add in, it's not 3:30 in the afternoon, it's 1:30. Right. I assume he knows that Darius has been drinking. You know, nobody has asked how many drinks, Brandon had that night, or, you know, nobody, you know, I assume he knew Darius had been drinking. So there's just all the, and by the way, you know, nobody's talking about Jaden Bradley, who also was
he's a mystery, man in all this.
Right. And I don't want to forget, I mean, Miller did have, I mean, he was absolutely unbelievable last night. I mean, he is just a phenomenal. And Bradley's a phenomenal talent as well. He's closer to where I am. I think he's from Rochester. But I also think Alabama really maybe did Miller a disservice by not, you know, in hindsight, if they had dealt with this on day one and Miller had said, you know, I'm really upset. I never knew the gun was there. I'm so disappointed in Derry. I mean, there's no way the whole team didn't know about this the first 8 hours and that Oates didn't know about. And wasn't there something about Oates calling Ray Lewis about how to handle this?
Nicholas, Nate Oates said 2 days later in an interview on the Alabama radio network or sports network, whatever it was, that he had called Ray Lewis for advice. We'll go to a break. More of your phone calls right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And welcome back. We appreciate you being here. And Trey is up next in Arkansas. Hello, Trey.
Hi, Paul. I was wanting to talk about the Razorbacks and how the SEC must hate us for making that schedule, and also Brandon Miller.
Go right ahead.
How in the world can you give us a month out of the state? I know the A&M game is technically a home game, but that's on the road. You've got to throw us a bone there.
Trey, I don't know what to say on that.
And then Brandon Miller, I think if they would have sat him, we wouldn't have as much turmoil, but he also did deliver a firearm to what would have been, which is a murder. I think it's wrong, and I think he should be suspended, but also, why didn't you just sit him?
I agree with you. I mean, I think the time to do it would have been early on, and they could have said, listen, first of all, you never explain suspensions anyway. I'm sure they were concerned that they would give the impression that it had something to do with his involvement, which obviously it would have. I have no earthly idea. That's the problem with not being able to ask questions at this point. And but you also can't answer questions at this point when you're involved in a legal matter. So there are going to be a lot of what we saw yesterday was spin across the board, spin from the attorney, spin from the administration. Clean up on aisle two for Nate Oates. Today, it's all starting to hit the fan again. Thank you for the call. Steve is in Alabama. Hello, Steve.
Hey, I was calling and wanting to clarify at least a couple of things. I think a guy identified himself as a detective and said that Anderson told the gun owner that there was something in the chamber. And actually, the gun owner retrieved the gun from Anderson's car. The gun owner is the one that told the alleged shooter that there was something, some kind of acronym to mean that there's a gun in the chamber. So it seems like some of these people think Brandon Miller provided the gun to the alleged shooter. And apparently the alleged gun owner had ridden with Miller somewhere. The alleged gun owner inadvertently left his gun in the vehicle, or maybe he left.
Well, I don't know if he inadvertently did it. Steve, you live in Alabama. It's one thing to have a gun in your car. It's another thing to take a gun into a nightclub.
Well, that's true, but I know a lot of that goes on, and it's not supposed to. But I firsthand know that a lot of that happens. So let's say that's beside the point. Anyway, the gun was in the car, and then the people that are directly involved have been booked and are in jail with no bond. And apparently Anderson's questions and the detective, I was reading straight from the story of what the detective.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network beginning at 3 Eastern.